Fawtacular, episode 333, War Games Spectacular, for November 20th, 2012.
Welcome back to Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast. I'm your host, Dustorm, and today we have a very, very, very special guest with us today. We have Kevin Franklin from 343 Industries himself, lead multiplayer designer. Welcome, Kevin.
Yeah, it's great to be here. I'm really excited to keep talking about the game, and it's been a fantastic launch and a great few weeks of online, and it's great to be on the show. Thank you so much, Dustin.
Well, thank you for such a great and awesome and whatever other adjective you want to put in front of Halo 4, the wonderful game that it is. You guys really went all out, and in my opinion, it's one of the best multiplayer experiences for Halo to date.
Oh, well, thanks a lot, and I know that we're just going to keep making it better and keep working on it, as we're just as big of fans as you guys are. I appreciate the comments. Thanks.
And that's good to know. I think a lot of people are really happy that a lot of the development base is actually a pretty big fan base as well, and I think that's actually something that a lot of people don't know as well. Probably a little bit more of the casual audience doesn't quite know it, but there's I would want to say maybe 90-95% of the dev team on Halo is there because it's Halo, because they love Halo, not because they're there to work for Microsoft or work on a AAA title, but because it's Halo.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's all around the industry, like, where our team sort of came together with so much experience, and everyone really just wanted to make this game. So all Halo fans. And I'm just on Xbox.com looking at how many 343ers are still online playing the game when they're technically on vacation. But yeah, it's something I've, like, never seen before as a development team this committed to a game post-launch. They're all online, and they're all sending us the issues and changes and feedback, and that's all sort of getting rolled into all the updates we're working on. It's really amazing.
That's great. I mean, one prime example is that we saw BS Angel, who's the community manager over at 343. She actually helped participate and referee a tournament this weekend called the Fight Like a Girl tournament, which I was able to help referee as well. And that just kind of shows the community commitment that you guys as a studio, even though you're kind of under the corporate Microsoft umbrella, it just shows how much community involvement you guys are really looking forward to making sure everyone feels like the community is important.
Yeah, we have an entire team. I know many of you know Allison and Jessica, like, and we're even expanding that team as we speak. And it's really big for us to you know, cater to the community, because, you know, we are, this, like I said, we're just as big of fans as you guys are, and we feel the same way about issues and things that aren't being fixed, and updates and more content, and, you know, it's great to be behind it like that.
That's good. One thing you just mentioned a couple minutes ago was the fact that you're looking at kind of all the community feedback and updating changes. So kind of with what kind of detail you can go into, address how the change process happens, how the updates get pushed out, what updates you choose to push out through the service, and kind of how does that whole flow work through getting Halo to be tip-top shape?
We sort of have this plan that we actually had worked on before launch, and that was how we were going to update once a week the War Games experience. Spartan Ops gets an update as well every week with the new missions. So we really knew that we wanted to keep this going. I would say we have sort of that plan that we go off of, but we've also got all of the feedback and the new things that arise that we're paying attention to. So we all check Twitter every day, all of our ads. We read through all of those, even if we don't respond. We also have a lot of presence in the forums. We're reading all that. And, you know, like, as we were just talking about, we play online. So every week we sort of bring up this list of fixes that we want to make or improvements. And that could be everything from a new playlist to to a bug fix, to a tuning change, to even just moving a spawn point that we like didn't like or that maybe caused a bad spawn. And we list off all these fixes at the beginning of the week, and then we put them in, and then we test them internally, and then they kind of go live usually Sunday or Monday with the rest of the updates. And right now, there's many of us working on these fixes, especially on the test side, and we try to get as many as we possibly can per week without, obviously, without introducing any new unwanted issues.
Right. So there are a couple of big ones that have kind of popped up recently.
Mm-hmm.
One of which being the complex wall glitch.
Yes, I'm happy to say, is fixed today.
Very nice. Does that mean we're going to see it in the next week, or how does something like that get fixed? Because that historically has been one of the more odd things to patch, mm-hmm. Depending on how you kind of architect the map. But how does that kind of fix? Is it easier to do now with how you've kind of architect the game and the maps, or like what's the process behind that?
So actually, the first complex fixes we put in around on the 6th, but then they don't go live until the 12th. So we try to get the fix in as early as we can in the week, and then it'll go live a week later. So the complex one lasted a little bit longer than I would have liked because we just discovered it, just missed the fix deadline for the week. So the bug was fixed on our side. I guess that would have been on the 12th of last week. And then it went through testing and all the changes and uploading to the server. And then the fix is now live on the 19th. So that's sort of like a little insight into the process of how long it takes for something to get fixed, because it has to go through that, all the testing and the update cycle. But the great thing is that we can make these fixes every week. So if we know about it at the beginning of the week, there's a really good chance that it'll be fixed by next week.
Right.
And that fix in particular, we actually fixed, I think, 6 different spots on Complex at once.
Wow.
The biggest one was the one where people were getting stuck in the wall. But yeah, there's a few others that we found and that people had posted online that we also fixed. And the way we fix them is we'll put invisible collision in sometimes, or we'll put another kill volume, either soft or a hard kill volume.
Very nice.
One thing to note on those fixes, though, is that when they do go out, they only affect the playlists. So if you're in matchmaking, and the bugs will still exist in custom games.
Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, but if you do want to grab those fixes, you can pull them down from the hoppers in the recently played game share.
So it's something that you're actually doing in the game or the custom map for the matchmaking playlist.
Yeah, sorry. Whenever I say hoppers, I mean playlist too. Yeah.
Right. Hopper's playlist, kind of interchangeable.
Yep.
All right. So there's a little snag of information for you guys. Hopefully that relieves some stress on that. At least I know a couple of friends of mine have expressed some dissatisfaction with that.
Well, for sure. I did as well. Yeah. It was really tough to see that, and we knew how it really negatively impacts so many games of Oddball. And I like to apologize for it. It was something that we didn't catch it in test, and but we were luckily we did build a system that lets us react to these things very quickly. So instead of having to remove the map from Oddball, we got to put a fix in, and it's much better now. That update
that's
also
great.
Fixed and it also fixed a bunch of issues on Ragnarok, and Haven had a whole bunch of fixes this week as well. I think there was about 5 or 6 spots on Haven, the little exploit jumps that we fixed up.
Right. So you guys are keeping a very keen eye out for that kind of stuff.
Yeah, definitely. And we prioritize them based on how bad they are. But we try to fix as many as we can each week. And but also, get the new content in. So we had SWAT the first week, and then we had Team Snipers this week. So we really sort of balance like how much new content we can offer versus how much are we fixing.
Right. Another thing that the community kind of voiced concern about is a quote-unquote lack of game types. So there's mm-hmm. some game types that we haven't seen in Halo 4 that have been rumored to possibly come down the pipe later with kind of how you've re-engineered the system for Halo 4. So things like map, territory, or race, territories, and a couple other game types. People are kind of wondering, is there with how Halo 4 is designed, is there a way that you can integrate those into Halo? Kind of like a plug-and-play system, and then on top of that, is it something that 343 is looking into introducing into the game later down the road? Is that something you can talk about?
Yeah, I can touch on it. I mean, the classic stuff sort of fits with everything else that we're doing, where it really was being rebuilt from the ground up. So when you look at Team Snipers, which we just released this week, for example, it actually is rebuilt off the new Infinity Slayer script. So because of that, we can't really just copy and paste like old game modes. We have to make sure everything works with, you know, the new heartbeat system, or it works with the new presentation layer metal system. So it isn't very fast to get them in, but we are trying to get, you know, at least one classic or new experience in per week. So I hear a lot of feedback on, like, people asking for territories and doubles and everything that's coming up, but we want to sort of mix in new stuff with the classic stuff. So we've had two classic updates so far, SWAT and Team Snipers this week, and I'm hoping we can get some new stuff mixed in as well.
All right. What about, like, game types that are quote-unquote physically separate, like Race, where it's not like a derivative of Slayer, but it's actually its own kind of unique game type?
Mm-hmm. It's definitely possible for us to add that. And, you know, I can't say it's coming soon, but it is something that, you know, we keep hearing a lot of community feedback that they want it. We can look at adding it. It's just like, how does that fit in with everything else?
Okay.
Yeah. So, like, luckily we've built a really, really powerful post-launch updating system, and I hope you guys can see that really coming as the new updates come through. And the best part is, as soon as we, you know, get a really good handle on all the fixes, and we've, you know, there aren't any more walls to hide in anymore, there aren't, we take care of all that stuff, we'll have even more time to, you know, spend rebuilding classic content or creating new modes.
All right. Speaking of new modes, there's one that you guys kind of slipped in near the very end that you didn't talk too much about, and I kind of want to get your take on it, but it is Extraction. So for those of you who have not really dug into the custom games features that much, there's a new game mode in Halo 4 called Extraction, where it's almost like Territories, where you have to go around and initialize an extraction of Promethean or Forerunner artifacts, and you have to defend it for a certain amount of time, and then afterwards you get a point if you successfully defend it, and it's the first to 5 extractions. So go into a little bit of detail on how you guys came up with the game type, and what was the inspiration for this new kind of twist on a classic Halo game type.
Yeah, Extraction is definitely on disc, and, you know, it's, please check it out in Custom Games, let us know your feedback on it as well. It was sort of, I don't want to say the spiritual successor to Assault. It's probably the closer one, but it does have some Territories elements for sure. And if you haven't played it yet, the basic setup is you have two teams of 5, and at the beginning of the map, you've got 2 extraction points, and A and B. And a team can run over, and if you hold down X near the extraction point, you'll plant your extraction device, which is this really cool Forerunner object that animates and sort of turns around while it's extracting. And once the timer runs out, if you successfully extract, if you successfully extract, it'll sort of transport all of these this high value cargo that's around the extraction point. And you can see this really cool sequence where it gets extracted out. And then the other team sort of wants to stop your extraction by converting it to their own. So the best strategy in this one is to go plant your extraction device and then defend the site with as well as you can until you get an extraction. And then once a site's extracted, it'll move on to another one, and there's 5 sites that it rotates through. This mode we really liked just having 2 different objectives that they weren't as like high or as crazy as hills. But, you know, you could really get some rotating objective gameplay, let players use different parts of the map. And please check it out in Custom Games.
Yeah, so we actually had we had our first Halo 4 Monday Night Matchmaking as of this recording tonight. So we actually the last game I played, I threw up that in customs, and we actually had a pretty good time with it. It was definitely one of the first things to note was you're wanting to pay attention to the time, and when you get to about 3 or 4 points on the board, you start to strategize a bit more. It's like, okay, I can keep this one without having to worry about the other one, or I need to stop them. I need to convert it so the time resets on that one. And it's an interesting little kind of back and forth strategy of knowing when you need to defend and then when you need to kind of at least interrupt an extraction or convert an extraction.
Yeah, it gets especially intense when it's sort of like 4-4 and each of you has an extraction point, and then you're like really have to play the timers and like slow down the other team from getting their extraction. And I think you touched on a lot of that strategy there.
And that strategy is almost kind of similar in Dominion as well.
You're keeping an eye on the bases and catchers, yes.
On the times, yeah.
Yeah, knowing when the resupply is going to happen. And, you know, I like that there's that. If you do take the time to, like, really understand the timers and you're sort of a pro gamer, this very skilled gamer that's broken down all these mechanics, it will give you that extra little bit of advantage. And that couple with team play is a huge differentiator between, you know, a complete organized team that's winning versus one that's just, you know, playing, going with the flow, I should say.
Right. Yeah. Ragnarok is another kind of interesting one as well, because we have this is the first map where we saw the Mantis on, and it works really well for the new game types in Halo 4, especially Infinity Slayer.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, you know, working with Ragnarok and putting the Mantis and the Banshee in at once. We actually used to have these duels that were like the Mantis versus Banshee duels, and we would just set it up and just do it hundreds of times and see. We really understand the dynamic between these two vehicles and how they interacted with each other. And then everything gets even more different, because when sniper rifles and splazers and everything mix up the amount of shots you're putting on the vehicles. But
yeah,
I think some of the strategies I'd love to hear coming out of that one are like knowing if a team knows how many shots it takes to bring down a Mantis, after it's taken a bit of damage, having your sniper just get in those last couple shots is critical.
Yeah. I think a couple of critical things to note on, at least when you're fighting against the Mantis, for people that haven't at least caught onto this or haven't played Halo quite as much multiplayer to figure this out, correct me if you feel otherwise, Kevin, but it seems like it takes 2 laser shots to take out a Mantis, and about maybe 2 full rounds of sniper if you're just fine with a sniper. If it's unshielded, it maybe takes almost a full clip of sniper to take out a Mantis. Rockets, maybe 2 or 3 rockets, depending on how and where you hit it. The railgun, I don't know. I haven't really found the railgun too effective against vehicles. It more just kind of jostles them around a bit other than doing a lot of damage.
Yeah, the railgun against vehicles is much trickier. Whenever I use it, I try to aim for specifics. Like, it works well against warthogs, because you can flip them if you aim at the right spot. But it definitely is an anti-Spartan weapon. Personnel, yeah. I wouldn't. Not one of the strongest anti-vehicle weapons.
I love using the railgun against someone, though.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
It's so much fun.
Especially when I always get that feeling right at the end where I'm like not sure whether or not I'm going to make the shot or not.
Right.
And then it's like so satisfying when I pull it off.
Well, one of the things that I'm still trying to grasp with the railgun is that there's a certain kind of time window where you can actually release the trigger before it automatically shoots itself. So, and it's a little bit different, or it feels a little bit different than it actually operates in the campaign. The way it does in the multiplayer, because in the campaign, I think it actually detonates quicker on its own while you're holding the trigger, and in multiplayer, it actually lasts a little bit longer. Does that sound about right?
I don't know for sure, actually. I know that we do have some weapons and vehicles that are different than the campaign versions.
I think that's one of them.
Yeah. There might be a little bit of network lag that could play a role in that as well. So that's a good thing to keep an eye out on. But I think that little window that you're discussing is one of the most important things to master if you're going to, like, break the skill curve on that weapon.
Yeah. So there's
also,
there's...
like, I think the range is another huge deal with it. You definitely don't want to be using it up close.
I've gotten a few long ones with it. If you can anticipate the run of someone and figure what the, where that where they're going to end up being for the, it's really satisfying to get a long range railgun, and I've actually gotten a couple of those.
Oh, definitely.
So it's just like lasering someone from across the map. It's like it shouldn't be done, but you do it anyways, and you just feel like a god.
And I think that's what, touching on the vehicle damage thing, this blazer really is your anti-vehicle weapon that way. We didn't want to just make it a complete clone, so that's probably another reason our sandbox team carefully balanced the way it interacts with vehicles.
Yeah. I think in a lot of people's minds, though, the Mantis is a little overpowered, just because it can take so much damage before being taken out, because you can easily exterminate a team plus some before it can get taken out.
Yeah, I think the first week I was feeling that for sure. But as I've been playing more BTB, I've been watching lots of people are, you know, bringing that plasma pistol in their loadout that sort of helping balance that out a bit.
Yeah.
But definitely when you get a teammate helping you or protecting you to make sure you don't get hijacked, that is like, if you get a combo like that, you can do really well.
Right.
Another thing is just
knowing kind of how to operate a vehicle, because one other big proponent that is kind of in the Mantis in terms of just kind of watching your back as a tank, because you're not too movable, but if you can really watch your radar and watch where people are coming, you can dominate with a tank.
Yeah, definitely. I mean,
so there's similar play styles.
There's no question the Scorpion is awesome. Yeah. They do. I think the Mantis is a little bit more vulnerable than the tank. Because it's a one-shot kill at very, very long range, where the Mantis doesn't have that long-range potential as easily.
Right.
Yeah.
So, out of all the maps that you could have remade, why Ragnarok?
I would say we knew it would work well with the Mantis, like, just in terms of flow and scale. We all absolutely loved Valhalla, and that was definitely one of our top three right from the get-go, ones that we wanted to remake. And I think it just came together as we rebuilt it in the Halo 4 engine pretty early, and we were doing lots of playtests with the new sandbox, and we found it worked really well. And it just stuck. I'm really happy with it, too.
That's good, because I think more people are satisfied with it than actually kind of what the general voices of it is, because Ragnarok, just like Blood Gulch, is just one of those maps where it magically works in Halo.
Given the
game types that it's really built for, and Ragnarok, or I guess going back to Halo 3 Valhalla, it was really designed for just about every game type that was in Halo 3. You had territories that got played in it quite a bit. Capture the Flag was a big one. Slayer was a big one. Team Snipers was a big one. Assault. The only one that really pops into mind that wasn't played as much on there was Oddball.
Mm-hmm.
But Oddball is more of a smaller map game type. So it seems like that Valhalla, along with kind of its Blood Gulch counterpart, just is a good overall map for the majority of the game types that come pre-configured with Halo to begin with.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, there's no question. I think you hit some really good points on the versatility and also the way it works with our new sandbox. And I'm glad it's there.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was actually another change we made. Lots of people were saying that it was being voted on almost every time. We slightly reduced its frequency of showing up in the Big Team Infinity Slayer playlist.
Aww.
You can still get it quite a bit, because it will come up... actually, I have the numbers on screen right now.
But it's Ragnarok. It's Valhalla.
Yeah.
It's almost a pixel-perfect remake, too, minus like some visual aesthetic changes. But other than that, it's a very, very much identical Valhalla.
It's very faithful, yeah. And one of the artists, Vic DeLeon, he was one of the original artists on Valhalla, and he was the main artist that worked on Ragnarok as well. So it definitely has a lot of that sort of retro love in it.
Cool. I know Vic.
Yeah.
Very nice.
And we've been hearing lots of requests for more classic maps to be remade, and we're definitely paying attention and listening to those, and they're going into consideration. But I know that it was a big deal for us on launch that we had as many new and fresh experiences as we possibly could. And yeah. I think we're already seeing lots of people remake some of the classics in Forge. And it's definitely a possibility that we'll start working those into some matchmaking playlists in the future. So we're going to get a really healthy mix of sort of new stuff and classic favorites.
That's good to hear. I'm sure a lot of people will be very happy with that.
I can't say when, but it will. It is something that we're definitely going to be looking at.
Fair enough. That's kind of one of the big things, one of the topics of discussion that comes up every now and then, at least for us, is at what point do you reintroduce maps into kind of a franchise such as Halo, and when do you really create new content? Because this is kind of one argument that we've had in the past is, if the game is still online, so like a lot of the Halo 3 stuff, since you can still kind of go back and play, you don't want to focus too much on remaking some of those. You want to focus on going back and remaking some of the older, really classic maps, which is what you guys kind of did with CE Anniversary, was you went back and had 7 maps from Halo 1 and 2 that are no longer on live, and actually bring them to the forefront of a current generation console and be able to play it that way. So there's that, and then there's also, you don't want to really remake a map that was directly done in a previous game, at least not for another like 3 or 4 DLCs out. So that's kind of at least our take on it from what we've discussed in the past, and I'm not sure what your guys' take quite is on doing map remakes, but there's kind of an art to when to introduce remakes into a franchise, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And I think you touched on great points there. It's a real balance between, you know, providing new content and remake content. And we're seeing, it's really easy to ask for stuff that you know you love. But, you know, we're always challenging ourselves to, you know, find new stuff that we're all going to love. And I think some of the maps evolve more, and we really see more people play them. I think we're going to see more of that come out. Exile, for example, is one of our absolute favorites that blew us away as we started playtesting it and spending more time on it. Haven, for sure, is another good example. And I think I would like to talk about one of the voids that we sort of see in the playlist right now, is that, and we're hearing your feedback on it as well, is that we maybe need more smaller maps in Infinity Slayer, and we're hearing that feedback a lot, and it's something that we are looking at and addressing internally.
And that kind of actually brings up a question. When are you there? And this has been a question that the community's kind of asked too. When are you guys really looking into introducing Forge maps into the playlist? One example, was this last weekend during the flag tournament, a lot of people that were in the lobbies asked, why isn't Relay in one of the playlists already? It's a default on disk map that's already in there. Why haven't we seen it in the playlist yet? Can you kind of give an explanation for that, and when can we expect that kind of Forge maps to start being introduced into the playlist?
I can say yes. It definitely is on our list. Relay on CTF is, I'm actually having looking at some little more tuning tweaks at it internally for when we like prepare it for the playlist. The actual date or timeline I can't give you, because we're not sure yet. It all depends on how much more fixes we have to get this week. I know that they won't be in for next week, but the weeks after are a possibility. Like I said, it all depends on, you know, how much we're doing each week to either, you know, solve issues or do balance changes or add new modes, and we're just balancing that time as best we can. But they will be coming.
All right. And are you guys going to be pulling similarly how you've done with Reach, kind of pulling from the community aspect of things? Is there a way you can see where what popular maps are being downloaded the most and try to integrate those into matchmaking? What's kind of your roadmap for getting community content into the playlist, and what playlist would those things end up appearing in?
Well, we recently did a community cartographer event with the community, and we got a whole bunch of maps that way. And I know that we're going to be looking at those, and, you know, sort of finding out what it's going to take to get them into the matchmaking playlists. So that's probably one of the biggest goals for us there.
All right.
I think there's a second half to that question I missed, though.
Yeah. So it's like, how? So the two parts was how do you plan on finding the maps, which ones you're looking to get in there, and then when kind of a timeline of when you think you'll be implementing these after you kind of chosen. Is it kind of like a you have a 2-week, 3-week test of the maps, and then you'll push them out, see if they're compatible, and if so, is that something that we'll see maybe 3 months down the road, 4 months down the road? How? What's
yeah,
kind of the time frame on that?
Honestly, the time frame is like just as fast as we can work on it. With the first, we're hoping to get a little bit more time, but the first few weeks we've really been focusing on fixing these little exploits and areas that that like the wall issue on complex and stuff like that. I can't give you exact time, but I can say it is coming down the pipe. Hopefully sooner than later.
All right. One question that I kind of have that not too many people, at least I've talked to, have had too much curiosity for is Meltdown. It seems very similar to a Halo PC map called Icefields. Is there any connection between Meltdown and Icefields?
I wouldn't say a direct connection. I do vaguely remember the one you're telling me about, but the you know, there's so much inspiration that's taken from the previous games. Like I've looked at Solus, and it's somewhat similar to Narrows, but you know, it really evolved into its own thing as we play tested it and tuned the routes, and you know, changed reordinance drops, and we you know changed the center, and we're not afraid to start with an old map as a beginning, and then let it grow into it. It's its own experience, and you can really see that throughout the franchise is sort of like Zanzibar evolved into Last Resort, and we had all these, you know, evolutions on maps. But you know, we tune it as it's its own, as if it's its own map, and it doesn't need to live up to previous expectations all the time. So it can really grow into it its own.
All right, I just didn't know if there was like some influence behind that map, because there, at least from, because I originally started on the Halo PC, which is why it kind of stood out to me as being, oh, it looks like almost a spiritual successor to Icefields.
Mm-hmm. You know, when you, the team, especially the level designers, they look at every single Halo map, and I can definitely say that, you know, it's always in the back of their minds, like what makes great Halo gameplay, you know, how do routes work, what's the Halo model for sight lines. We're at a good spot, hide a rocket launcher or you know, maybe build a kill room like the one on Sword Base. So, you know, there's definitely always going through the minds of our level designers, and I think you can always find inspiration like that.
All right. You had the privilege and I had the privilege of going to MLG Dallas. So we got to see Halo 4 be played in a competitive, scene. How'd you find that experience, and just seeing what competitive Halo players can do with what you've made over the past 3 years?
Oh, it was fantastic. That was my second MLG, and I absolutely loved it. And having Halo there just, you know, sealed the deal. It was great to see the energy of the fans. We got so much good feedback. Everyone was coming up to us. We were right watching, like, shoulder to shoulder with all the fans, talking with the pro players about what they liked, what they didn't like, what their strategies were. I got to chat with some coaches, and just the energy of having Halo back in MLG was amazing.
And, yeah, I'm sure. I know a lot of people were happy to see, and it sounds like there's a good possibility that it's there to stay for at least this next year.
Yeah, I actually I don't know all those details yet, but I certainly hope so. And I just love that we, you know, are able to show up and, you know, be part of that competitive community. You know, a lot of your feedback and the competitive feedback does make it into the game in all sorts of different ways. It was really good just to talking balance and hearing all the ordnance strategies teams were using. You know, some of the stuff like dropping a power up for a friend who has a really good combo weapon with it. You know, if you've got, we certainly saw the saw damage boost combo explode out of MLG. we saw Snipe Down just go absolutely mad with the sniper rifle a couple times, which was really fun to see, because there's certainly no one at our studio that can use it like that. And, you know, Ninja and seeing Warriors show up and take down the victory is really cool to see. Great games, especially that. I think it was the first game on Solus where they rushed in. They were down by two and they rushed in for the win. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, if you guys have not seen any of the Halo 4 stuff, I think MLG still has some recap streams up on their website. If not, you can probably YouTube a couple clips as well. There's this one sick triple. I think it might have been Ninjas. Just had a couple of six snipes on, and it's like with the game only having not even been out. Granted, there is some kind of behind the scenes discussion of how much time these players actually got to have hands on with the game before it actually came out. But even in just that short amount of time, the fact that they've mastered the sniper that well on the new game is just kind of unbelievable. Because these guys are just really talented.
Yeah.
So, what was kind of the general feedback that you got from the competitive community? What was kind of like some of the biggest praise that you got, and then what was kind of some of the biggest complaints that you got throughout the weekend?
I got a lot of good feedback on the smoothness and the flow of the gameplay, the way the weapons are working, especially in LAN. I think that's one of the, and it was really good to hear that because, I mean, as a mechanics, you know, nut, I'm like,
minus the black screen, of course.
Yeah,
got patched day zero.
Yeah, the router issues. You know, the game wasn't out yet. but yeah, hearing the feedback of them, like telling us, like face to face, that they love the feel of the weapons was huge for us because I, like, you know, that's your main connection to the game through the controllers, like how well every little aspect of, you know, swapping a weapon, reloading, firing, all that reacts to your input. And knowing that that's like one of the core features of not just any competitive game, but any game ever, getting that right was huge, and hearing the feedback on that was fantastic. I think some of the concerns players are having were around the power of the BR and DMR and the rifle sort of situation, and we're watching that very carefully. I think we're going to see that really evolve as more players, you know, adopt to the light rifle and the Covenant carbine. And we sort of see it not just be a two gun show, but a four gun show. And how does that affect the overall balance of the metagame? I think we're really going to see that develop in the coming months.
Yeah, well, it's interesting to go into matchmaking and see a bunch of different loadouts where there's a good number of people using the BR, a good number of people using the DMR, a good number of people using the light rifle. A lot more of the competitive community leans more towards the light rifle because of zoomed in on the light rifle is actually the quickest way to kill someone with the precision weapons in Halo 4. And then you see a carbine every now and then. I don't think carbine is one of those as widely used as the other three. But for people that have classic or have more or less well known to use the carbine in the past that have gotten comfortable with it, I think they've gone back and kind of mastered the carbine in there as well.
Yeah, the carbine is no question one of the highest skill curve weapons in the game, especially because the tuning is new. I'm pretty sure it has the fastest kill speed if you land every shot, but it's very difficult to land every shot. I certainly can't do it. But if a very skilled player, you know, gets that in their hand and they can consistently land every shot, or maybe they've got a teammate with an AR who's just helping them get just the right combo of bullet damage to, you know, get those kills faster, it's really going to make a difference. And yeah, I think it's good to have extremely highly skilled weapons in the game, and we're going to keep an eye on, you know, the balance between the all the weapons, as I said, and see how it develops over the next coming months. And if we need to make an update to, you know, change tuning, we'll definitely have those discussions.
Right. And one of the things that was really evident in competitive play at MLG, and I think it's kind of a benefit to MLG in this fact, is that you guys have really amped up the speed of play in Halo 4. And you've discussed this before, but I kind of want to see what your thought process was on this, where you're going in, and instead of the regular 50 kills to win, now it's 60 kills to win. That's kind of evidence that the game is a little bit faster and taking up the same amount of time. But what was kind of the idea going around the office of speeding up the Halo experience? Why change the tempo of the game and actually increase it? And it seems to work. So what was kind of going through your heads at that time?
It was sort of we had quite a few Slayer prototypes earlier in development, and one of them was focused almost solely on tempo. So that is sort of like the time to spawn, the time to death, your kill speed, you know, everything about that. And for a long time, it was very volatile. And it's very difficult to, you know, just there's a lot of knobs you have to turn to sort of increase the speed of the game. It's everything from the way the weapons despawn, how fast they come into the game, your actual spawn time, pressing X to respawn, damage, the spawn influencer systems on the map, like how close you spawned your teammates versus enemies versus damage. Really, there wasn't one variable that isn't changed in changing the tempo. And I knew that sort of early on that we wanted to focus on a faster experience because it does raise the skill curve and it does, really amplify that intense combat you get. And you're right about that. That's the reason we went up to 60 kills.
All right.
But actually, back to the prototypes, we sort of had one that just focused only on scoring. And this, I think some people caught it earlier, is called Slayer +++ or M Slayer. This just focused only on the new scoring system and how medals worked with scoring and how you're earning ordnance. Then we had another one that was just on the ordnance system, then another one that was just on tempo, then a few others that were just focused on weapon balance. And it really sort of came together probably a few months before E3. We started to mix all of the Slayers together and React and sort of develop them into one solid experience that eventually became Infinity Slayer. And it was just a fantastic process to go through. Sometimes you really had that feel of a great feeling game with the right tempo, and sometimes it felt too fast, sometimes it felt too slow, sometimes it felt like the weapons weren't keeping up with the damage. And it just took, thousands and thousands of hours of playtesting and tuning to get us to where we are. And, we're going to keep going on it. We're going to keep working on it to perfect it as much as we can.
And it looks like you guys have really developed a good format for it, too. Because it definitely works. The gameplay is a lot faster. It's a lot more engaging. And in most cases, it's a lot more fun, except when you're on the receiving end of constantly being killed over and over by, like, a banshee or something. Or a mantis. Why kind of take the and I mean this in the most respect, I'm not trying to like compare or anything, but why kind of take the Call of Duty route and introduce 10 points per kill and 10 points for some of these game types?
The biggest thing right off the bat was when I played Reach and Halo 3, I would look at the post-game score screen and very often it wouldn't recognize my true input on helping my team win the game. I always hear about the wheelmen, the sort of unsung hero of the guy who delivers the flag for his team three times with the Warthog, but he doesn't actually get the credit for scoring those points. So, we would look at like games of Reach where your post game score, you would just see a whole bunch of zeros except for the guy who had won for scoring the flag. And, that was a really true and sort of unbiased, presentation of who got the points for their team or who got the kills or who stood in the hill. But when we were looking at the different scoring systems, I wanted to make sure that we were finding ways to recognize all of a player's impact on their team. So if they were getting assists, if they were killing with style, if they were going on a spree that sort of tears open a game for their team and gives you a real chance to win, like how are we paying attention to that beyond just kills and kill deaths and flag captures? So when we redesigned all the medals and we looked at all the different medals, we really focused on how do we sort of translate what's going on into rewards for players. And the way you can weight a reward versus a distraction, which is a very low point medal, 5 points, versus capping a flag, which is 100 points. Building a point structure was absolutely important for us. And that wouldn't work on the old sort of 1 to 50 scale. So we went to a 10-base scale that let us award medals in multiples of 5.
Okay. Is there any kind of particular reason why the overall score for like Slayer has to be in multiple of 10s instead of just like one kill, where like the player points could be the whole 5 and 10 points, but then you have like for Infinity Slayer, for instance, you have first to 600 when it's actually just 60 kills.
So when you get a kill in Infinity Slayer, you get 10 points. But then you're also going to get 10 points for your team. And then you could get a couple other medals on top of that. So, for example, if you got a Avenger medal on top of that. So you end up with 15 points, 5 points for the Avenger medal, 10 points for your kill. But your team actually only gets those 10 points. For the kill, because that's the this divide between your personal score and your team score. So keeping the actual kill points consistent was really important for us because we wanted to make 10-10.
Okay.
And then also when we looked at the score across all the game modes, you know, we wanted to make sure that we had some sort of consistency for your personal score. So it isn't, you know, you can definitely earn more points in CTF than you can in Slayer, but on for the most part, you know, if you did really poorly in a game, you'll have around 100 or so points. But if you did really well, you might have 300 or 400 or 500 points by the end of the game. And keeping that language consistent was really important for us.
All right. So we're pretty much almost done here. There's a couple other questions. I know I've kept you for quite a bit, and I appreciate the time that you're taking to talk to us.
No problem at all.
I hope this doesn't really scare you to not come back.
No, it's fun to always talk about this stuff, and I'm always up for sort of discussing the design behind these things. I could talk about this for days.
Yeah. We'll have to have you back on the show a little bit later. One final question before we wrap this up.
Mm-hmm.
And save the new questions I'm sure that we'll have for another time is, are we ever going to see something like the Insane Game Type? A lot of people used it to make some really interesting and fun customs in Halo Reach, and I've talked to a few people, and the community and the niche for this is probably not as big as the rest of the kind of the casual gaming crowd and the competitive scene. But is there a possibility that we could see a quote unquote insane game type be introduced into Halo 4 or somewhere down the line?
Definitely down the line, we're going to see, I think, some of the fun stuff come up. I know Fiesta, the one that we played at MLG, Fiesta, was really well received.
That was one of the more interesting games of the weekend.
Yeah, and I think, like, if you just look at the previous Halos, like how long those ones take to come out, it's probably a good estimation of when we'll be seeing them in Halo 4. We want to sort of focus on the staples first, and then we can put them together. But you know, the community modes, you know, if we start seeing them pop up and, you know, there's a lot of one becomes super popular, and we definitely, you start considering it for playlist updates for sure.
All right. I lied. I actually have one more question that I thought of during that question.
No problem. I got time for maybe a few more.
Is there ever going to be a spectator/tournament mode? And I wonder this because, Call of Duty has introduced this. There's other game that have it, like Team Fortress 2 has it as well. It's more of a PC platform game, but it has a spectator mode as well. Are we ever going to see this type of feature in Halo? And I know you guys have kind of discussed some of the network load that gets put onto the game. You want to introduce the least amount of lag and as possible into the game. But in LAN situations, there's usually not a concern for bandwidth or lag. So is there any chance that we might see some kind of spectator mode for maybe just local custom games?
We are definitely aware of the requests from the community, and you know, we've put it on our sort of list of things to look at and prioritize, but we can't commit to any sort of time or whether or not this will happen. It may or it may not. And I wish I could talk more about it, but that's all I can say really.
Is it something that you guys want to do?
Oh, definitely. I mean, there's as designers, we want to do absolutely everything. You know, there isn't. We have like this list, this vision of how much stuff we want to put into a game. That, you know, we want to make sure that, or we want to do as much as we possibly can. But you know, I have a personal, and it's definitely one of our studio philosophies, is that when we do things, we want to do them like absolutely as well as we possibly can, and make sure that they really come out, you know, shining. And if that, if it doesn't fit within the timeline, or it isn't possible technically, or there's going to be issues with it, then it certainly impacts our decision of whether or not we'll go forward with it.
All right. Well, that's all the questions I have for tonight. Is there anything that you kind of want to address to the audience in terms of feedback you've been hearing? Or
a couple of things I've been wondering, looking for things to tweet at me.
Yeah, sure.
SWAT, are people loving the... Are you starting with the DMR or the BR? I could definitely pull the data on it, but I would like to get a vibe of what the community is going with. I'm still starting with the battle rifle, and then I'll sort of try to pick up a DMR if I can, because I like having both. I think it's great to to switch back and forth.
That's an interesting one, because I initially started with the DMR, but then I saw a lot of other people using BR, and I just kept getting, for lack of a better word, swatted down. And I switched over to the BR, and it almost depends on the map, because there's at least how my playstyle works, I'm a lot better with the DMR. For some reason, I can land like first or second shots really well, but after that, if I try to complete with the BR, I usually miss like the fourth or fifth shot. I can usually hit that first or second, but I can never follow through for some reason. So DMR is usually a good one for me, but I've almost kind of gravitated towards starting with the BR, getting a feel for the game, and then if I need to, I'll switch to the DMR maybe two or three kills in. But with the BR, since it has the three bullet fire for one shot, it's almost a more reasonable weapon to choose to start out with.
I think it's a little bit trickier to land at the range, but on range shots, but up range or up close, it's definitely
good. Especially like on the initial spawn on Haven.
Yeah,
because like then you kind of want to lean towards DMR like at the start, but then you want to switch to BR afterwards.
Magnum is actually incredibly good too. If you have a height advantage on an enemy, I think it's something to do with the changes with our head boxes and our new character models. But you have a pretty good advantage if you're up top and aiming down with a Magnum. So like sort of if you're on top of Jerking on Complex, you can get some good headshots with it.
All right, well, listeners, if you want to kind of voice your opinion, tweet us, tweet Kevin, or send us an email. And we'll forward those on to you, Kevin.
Yeah, I'd love that. Always fun to hear. Some other little changes. Let's see. We added the Mantis to Meltdown today or last week. And we know there's a respawn issue on it that we're going to be fixing as soon as we possibly can. But that's a new addition. We also removed the Banshee from CTF Ragnarok, which was a... sort of in response to wanting to focus more on the ground combat and moving the flag, and the Banshee was sort of disrupting that. So let us know how you feel about that.
Okay.
I'm trying to think of anything else that I missed. I'm just checking over the playlist right now. I'm really impressed with seeing how much Big Team Infinity Slayer has really kept up with Infinity Slayer in the population counts, and that's awesome to see.
Yeah, Big Team has kind of been one of those really, really social game types where if you want to go in and warm up, it's a good place to go. If you're playing with friends, it's a good place to go because it's a generally easier environment to get acquainted with, I think.
Yeah.
I think and it kind of depends on a game-to-game basis, but it's almost a good place where a lot of I don't mean this like in a derogatory term, but underskilled players to really go in and kind of at least get a feel for it, because you have a lot of other teammates there with you, and you have a lot of people on the other team where you can actually find easier and try to learn how to play the game. At least that's kind of been my experience with trying to play with my dad.
Yeah, definitely. Also, our bulletin this weekend, I was getting lots of questions about like which ordinances you were getting as your personal ordinance rewards in Infinity Slayer. Why do I get, or how often does the Sticky Detonator come up compared to the Needler and stuff like that? So in our Halo bulletin that we released, we put up some graphs of how, like sort of the percentages of each weapon showing up. So if you haven't checked that out or you're curious with those systems, go take a look at that for sure.
Cool.
Yeah, so it explains sort of like how often the damage boost will come up compared to overshield or, you know, concussion rifle versus grenades or fuel rod cannon. Like, got all those little details. And it's actually different between Big Team Infinity Slayer and Infinity Slayer. They're tuned differently.
All right.
Yeah.
I did not know they were kind of tuned based on different maps.
I
figured the game types they would be tuned.
On vehicles. So for the vehicle-heavy maps, there's a slightly larger chance of getting an anti-vehicle weapon like a sniper rifle or a splazer or an explosive.
By the way, the incineration cannon is so much fun.
Yes, it is. And actually, one of the maps, Meltdown Dominion, will definitely spawn lots of incineration cannons.
Ooh. We haven't seen Meltdown Dominion yet, have we?
Yeah, it's out there.
Is that a new one recently?
No, it was there since launch.
Huh. I don't think I've ever played on it, Dominion.
Yeah.
Huh.
Incineration cannons, go there.
I'll have to look for it.
Yeah, that when you resupply your bases, there's a pretty good chance your base will resupply with an incineration cannon.
Perfect for a meltdown map. Wink, wink.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else?
No, I think that's it. It's been great talking to you about all this stuff, and hopefully we can do this again in the future. I know we're at 333, so maybe when we get to 343, we'll see.
I will let you know, if you're available.
Yeah, if I'm not, if I'm around.
If it doesn't
sure.
take 2 weeks to get you on the show. No, but we appreciate you coming on and talking with us and spending a long time. more than originally planned, but we got through it. You braved the weather that is Podtacular, and you survived. So congratulations.
Well, thank you. It was great talking to you guys.
So thank you guys for tuning in, for all of our newer listeners and for all of our past historical listeners. I hope this was really interesting for you guys, and let us know what you think. If you have any other questions, feel free to send them to us, and I'll be using discretion to forward them on to Kevin. spare him a little bit there. But if you have any questions or comments about anything that we talked on the show or anything Halo 4 related, feel free to send us a submission at submissions@podtacular.com, or you can use the big green button on the homepage, which is at www.podtacular.com. Remember, you can check us out on Twitter, twitter.com/podtacular, Facebook, facebook.com/podtacular, and on YouTube. Our YouTube channel is youtube.com/podtactv. In the upcoming episodes, we will be doing formatted shows where we'll be discussing one campaign mission, one Spartan Ops episode, and one multiplayer map, talking about tips and tricks for each one. Campaigns, Spartan Ops, we'll dig a little bit into the story, and we're looking at an hour and a half type show for each one, and then based on community content, we will read through that as well. So that's the kind of the format you can see coming from here on out. So again, I want to say thank you to Kevin Franklin for coming on. He is the lead multiplayer designer over there at 343. So if you are playing war games and playing war games a lot, you have him and his team to thank. So make sure you thank him on Twitter. You want to give out your Twitter handle?
It's Kevin_Franklin.
All right.
But if you're asking about new content, the best place to look is the Halo Waypoint blog we put out every week. I get a lot of tweets on sort of like when will something be coming, and I usually cannot ever to discuss that. It all comes out through the Halo Bulletin, so that's your number one best place to get information on that.
All right. If you want official news, you want to go to the official source.
But thank you so much for having me on the show, and it's been great talking to you.
Well, thank you, Kevin, and thank you guys for listening.